It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 41 degrees, a few clouds are drifting by. Well, they might be driven a little bit faster than that. At the airport, they have west winds at 13, gusting to 20, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly clear skies overnight tonight. High near 42 today, overnight low around 30. West winds 20 to 30 today, and west winds 20 to 30 tonight, too. For tomorrow, snow is likely between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., followed by rain and snow. Southeast winds to 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, over 100 Kodiak High School students walked out of classes yesterday as part of a statewide protest. A federal grant program that helps Alaskans keep safe from tsunamis is slated for elimination. State lawmakers are getting some lessons about how to spend COVID-related education funding, and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. President Biden is in Baltimore, Maryland today to see for himself what's left of the Francis Scott Key Bridge that collapsed last week after being hit by a container ship. He met with federal, state, and local officials on efforts to clear the debris to reopen one of the nation's main shipping lanes. He said from the air he saw a bridge torn apart, but on the ground, a community that's come together.
The damage is devastating, and our hearts are still breaking. Eight construction workers went to the water when the bridge fell. Six lost their lives. Most were immigrants, but all were Marylanders. Hard-working, strong, and selfless.
Biden said the federal government has Baltimore's back in rebuilding. He said the Army Corps of Engineers expects to reopen the entire channel to ship traffic by the end of May. An earthquake struck the New York City area this morning. The U.S. Geological Survey says it had a magnitude of 4.8 and was centered north of White House Station, New Jersey. Paul Earle is in charge of earthquake monitoring at the USGS. He says the quake was about 2.9 miles deep, which explains why people as far away as Philadelphia and Boston felt it.
This earthquake was felt by millions of people. We have currently over 100,000 reports describing the earthquake contributed to our website.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams says people should just go about their normal day, but should make sure that people they care about are safe and not too shaken up.
And I encourage New Yorkers to check on their loved ones to make sure that they are fine, not only from the infrastructure damage, but this could be a traumatic moment for individuals going through an earthquake.
Officials say 10 families have been displaced in Newark, New Jersey because of damage to their homes. Stock markets rallied after a report showed employers added more jobs last month than expected. NPR's Rafael Nam has more.
There's more good news for the U.S. economy. The labor market grew by more than 300,000 jobs in March, much stronger than what economists had expected. There was other good news, too. Wages continued to grow in March, but not so much as to spark fears about inflation. Investors liked the report, and all three major indexes rallied on the news. Keep in mind, stock markets had fallen this week over fears that the economy was getting too hot. But the latest data should provide the Federal Reserve room to cut interest rates this year. The timing of when that could happen, though, is still up in the air. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
On Wall Street, just before the close, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 307 points, the S&P was up 57, and the NASDAQ up 199 points. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Over 100 Kodiak High School students walked out of classes on Thursday as a part of a statewide protest over Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's vetoing a bill that would have permanently increased education funding. KMXT's Brian Benoit reports.
Thursday's walkout was organized by the Alaska Association of Student Government and was timed with similar protests in schools across the state from Ketchikan to Bethel. Tessa Davis is a freshman at Kodiak High School and helped organize the local protest.
So for here in Kodiak, we just need a funding increase. We have a really great school. We have really great programs offered here. When I moved here, I was like, wow, there's so much stuff going on in Kodiak, but now we're seeing that stuff go away because our school district can't afford it.
The students left class at 11 a.m. The protest lasted for about 40 minutes to recognize the 40 votes the legislature needed to overturn Governor Dunleavy's veto. The overturn vote failed by one vote last month, and school districts lost out on what would have been a $680 increase to the base student allocation, or how much the state funds schools by student count. The last significant increase to the BSA was in 2017. Aiden Johnson is a junior at the high school. He says electives are a major reason why kids go to school, and he's concerned how fewer staff from budget cuts could affect student engagement.
There's kids always coming in with these little sheets that say, you have 15 absences, you need to go to the office. It's very widespread, and cutting down classes kids love is just going to up that scale.
The Kodiak Island Borough School District has had to slash its budget by millions in recent years, in part to account for rising costs from inflation. In response, the district's Board of Education has discussed cutting several administrative positions and even teachers in both core classes and electives. School officials have also expressed frustration over the legislature's failure to increase education funding. In response to the walkouts, Dunleavy's communications director, Jeff Turner, said in an email the governor encourages Alaskans to, quote, exercise their First Amendment rights. However, he ended the email by defending the education bill veto, citing support for charter schools instead. In Kodiak, the school district sent staff to patrol campus grounds during the walkout, including Superintendent Cindy Mika.
We can't either support or encourage or not encourage anything that has to do with political action with students. It's against board policy. So while we don't condone a walkout, especially if it happens during school hours, my number one concern as the superintendent is always going to be the safety of the students.
The superintendent's office did, however, send an email to parents saying that students who leave class will be marked with an unexcused absence and may face consequences like detention. Mika says she hopes the students can learn something even though they're missing instruction time.
It's a lesson in civics for our students that they have the right to peacefully assemble and protest.
Most of the students return to the high school by the afternoon. In front of Kodiak High School, I'm Brian Venmore.
A federal grant program that aims to keep Alaskans safe from tsunamis is slated for elimination. Alaska Public Media reports that the director of the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Brian Fisher, told them the word came down on March 27th, an ironically inauspicious date in Alaska history.
We had all the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, earthquake and tsunami folks in Anchorage hosting a meeting about this grant and our earthquake program on the anniversary of the 64 quake, and that's the day that we heard this news, which is even more upsetting.
The Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program provided Alaska with up to $700,000 a year. Fisher says that money is used for tsunami inundation mapping, sirens, and crucially, public education.
Earthquake and tsunami day could be any day of the year. We lost over 130 people in the 1964 earthquake. 122 of those fatalities were caused by tsunamis. Losing this program, really, the end of the day could mean deaths in Alaska.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration proposes to eliminate the tsunami grant program so that it can apply the money to other priorities. Fisher says those include modernizing the technology the tsunami warning system relies on. He says that's a worthy goal that shouldn't come at the expense of projects in coastal communities.
We can have all the technology in the world to predict wave height, tsunami arrival time, but if we don't have this program that helps us communicate that danger at the ground level in our state and along our coast, all the technology in the world isn't going to help anybody.
The Biden administration's 2025 budget proposes to eliminate the program, but Congress holds the purse strings, and Alaska has a member on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Senator Lisa Murkowski's communications director, Joe Plesha, says Murkowski will do everything she can to ensure Alaska can address the variety of hazards it faces, including tsunamis. State lawmakers got some perspective on a COVID-related education funding dispute between Alaska and the federal government on Wednesday. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
Last week, the U.S. Department of Education called on Alaska to send nearly $30 million to four urban school districts. The agency said the state had failed to abide by conditions placed on public school aid dollars included in a 2021 COVID relief bill. Federal officials warned that the state would be designated a high-risk grantee, which could come with new restrictions on federal funds in the future. The dispute all boils down to an obscure, first-of-its-kind requirement on the more than $350 million Alaska received from that bill, the American Rescue Plan Act. It's called Maintenance of Equity. The idea was to make sure that schools serving low-income students weren't underfunded. In early 2021, the pandemic was raging and wide access to vaccines was still months away. Drafters of the bill were afraid states would slash education budgets if state revenue fell sharply, says Austin Reed with the National Conference of State Legislatures.
Congressional staff wanted to create a backstop to provide additional protections to education funding in districts that serve relatively larger populations of low-income students.
Reed was speaking to the Senate Education Committee, and basically, as Reed tells it, maintenance of equity was supposed to make sure that if a state cut education funding, low-income districts wouldn't suffer a sharper drop in state revenue than those serving higher-income students. But Reed says shortly after the passage of the American Rescue Plan came a surprise. A guidance document from the Department of Education released a few months later told states that the maintenance of equity provisions would apply whether or not states cut education spending. Here's Reed again.
This was a major update. To my eyes and some others, a plain language reading of the law supported the interpretation that maintenance of equity only applied in instances where state education budgets were cut.
And that's more or less the same argument Alaska's education department is making, that the state didn't cut the money it sends to school districts through its funding formula. In a letter, Education Commissioner Dina Bishop says she plans to challenge the high-risk grantee designation in the coming days. Bishop also threatened a constitutional lawsuit, saying it appeared that the education department's guidance changed the meaning of the law. Though Reed says more than 40 states were initially deemed out of compliance, Alaska is the only state that has not resolved the dispute. The chair of the Senate Education Committee, Anchorage Democrat Lukey Tobin, says lawmakers will examine all of their options. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
The proposed Alaska Long Trail.
The Bureau of Land Management is holding a series of public meetings next week on the Alaska Long Trail.
The proposed Alaska Long Trail is a 500-mile route that goes from Seward to Fairbanks, Alaska.
BLM Alaska Public Affairs Specialist Charlie Ebers says the Alaska Long Trail, which would be made up of existing and new routes, has been proposed for designation as a National Scenic Trail, and Congress has directed BLM to study the idea.
We're evaluating the characteristics which make the proposed trail worthy of a designation as a National Scenic Trail. We're looking at the feasibility, suitability, and desirability of designating the route as a National Scenic Trail.
Ebers says the public can play a role by providing input, including during meetings April 8th through 12th in Anchorage, Seward, Wasilla, Cantwell, and Fairbanks.
We're going to have maps at our meetings where people can draw right on the maps and show us where they think the trail should go or shouldn't go.
Ebers says a second round of meetings will be held virtually this summer. The Alaska Long Trail feasibility study is due to be completed by the end of 2025, after which it will be transmitted to Congress, which has the sole authority to make the National Scenic Trail designation, a status which could facilitate access to funding. Native Youth Olympics has been growing in recent years, both in Petersburg and across Alaska. Two coaches from Juneau's team came to Petersburg last week to show elementary and middle school students what the sport is all about. KFSK's Hannah Floor joined a fourth and fifth grade gym class and has this story.
I'm Coach Matthew. This is Coach Duke.
We're coaches. Several dozen kids sit in a wobbly line on the floor of Petersburg's community gym. Matthew Quinto and Duke Nyo are visiting from Juneau, where they coach Native Youth Olympics.
We're going to show you guys some games that have been played here in Alaska for hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
The two men kick balls suspended in the air by twine. They're demonstrating the one-foot and two-foot high kick. The different high kicks were used by hunters to signal to their community across the tundra.
And what did one-foot mean?
It means an unsuccessful hunt, but you're still safe.
Yes, perfect.
Quinto says the games taught people of the circumpolar north survival skills.
So when you think about Inupiaq, Yupik, Sotmi, any of those indigenous nations up there, the way they had to live, if you had to hop across ice floes, you had to be coordinated with your feet.
He says the point of the games is to help each other and work on survival and hunting skills.
Balance is really important on the ice, right? If you want to slip, one hand reach. You need food, you have to go hunting, and so there's stick pole and any arm pole, all those games that we play together, they help us get stronger so that we can help each other survive.
Some games simulate the pain of frostbite. In one, competitors curl their toes underneath their feet and walk on their toe knuckles.
Which I cannot do. I will not do it. It hurts so bad. But it's to demonstrate how bad it feels when you get your toes frostbitten, right? Because sometimes when you're out there, it's either warm up your toes or you're going to lose them.
Petersburg's Native Youth Olympics team is new. It started just over 4 years ago as part of an attempt to keep middle school kids active and engaged during the early days of COVID. Kids were able to learn and practice the events virtually. The team has been growing steadily. Last year, 13 middle schoolers from Petersburg competed at Juneau's traditional games. This year, more than twice that number are making the trip. And the sport has been gaining popularity around the state and even in the lower 48. Quinto thinks that's partly because it's so easy to love. He says people are drawn to the way athletes support each other, prioritizing camaraderie over competition. He says that approach goes back to the origins of the game, to the need for hunters to be successful.
Most of these games come from up north in the Inupiaq and Yupik area. And back in the day, you didn't want another hunter to not do well because that meant their family was going hungry. And that's not what you wanted. So we would share the best locations to get certain animals and do certain hunts, purely because it was for the better of the people.
He says that focus on the success of the community stayed with the games as they developed throughout the years. Jamie Cabral coaches Petersburg's Native Youth Olympics team. He says the collaborative attitude extends to individual athletes competing against one another.
They will try to help each other get to their highest point, even though they're competing against one another. And so it's all positive reinforcement from the competitors, and they're working together, and they're helping each other out. I just never been in an environment like that where everything is super, super supportive.
He says that while in many sports, a sportsmanship award can feel like a consolation prize for the least skilled team or player, in Native Youth Olympics, sportsmanship is more important than skill. It's more than how an athlete acts when they're competing or when they fail. It's also how much effort they put into supporting their teammates and their competitors.
Because everyone's a teammate there in reality. Yes, they do awards for first place, second, third, but it's how they interact throughout the whole entire tournament, how they respect the games, how they respect the elders that are there, how they respect officials, their coaches, other teams, how they handle themselves on and off the competition court.
After 2 full days of gym classes with the elementary and middle school kids, the Juneau coaches join Cabral and the middle school Native Youth Olympic team and the gym for a community-wide event. Each athlete has a game they're demonstrating as people mill around, trying out the events.
So, 2 foot high kick will be there, Inuit stick pole.
Coach Cabral is helping some youngsters with the stick pole. 2 kids sit facing each other, feet touching. They're holding a wooden dowel in a sort of perpendicular tug of war. The game would help hunters train to have the strength to pull a seal out of the water.
Pull. Oh, go, 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 go.
Pull backwards.
Pull backwards. Chin up, chin up, chest back. Oh.
After everyone gets a chance to try the games around the gym, folks file into the stands to watch the middle schoolers show off their skills. 8th grader Brody Whitethorn steps up for the Alaskan high kick. She starts out sitting down, the sole of her right foot on the floor, her right hand holding on to her left foot. Her left hand is behind her, palm to the floor. She looks up at the ball, suspended a good 4 feet above her. I want it higher, she tells Cabral. He raises the ball. She pauses. Then she pushes off with her right foot, kicking it up into the air toward the ball. For a moment, her body is balanced on that left hand, the palm still on the floor. Her right foot connects with the ball. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
The 7th annual traditional Alaska Games kicked off in Juneau yesterday. Petersburg's native youth Olympics teams are competing. The Zoom feed of a Delta Junction City Council meeting was interrupted by a pornographic video on Tuesday. It's the first time the Delta Council has suffered a so-called Zoom bombing. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, it's prompted new security measures.
The trolls struck early on in the council meeting by playing an explicit pornographic video clip that was visible to people online. Some council members apparently were unaware of the Zoom bombing until one of the trolls began verbally interrupting them a few seconds after council member Mike Prestigard recited the prayer.
What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? Can I know what's happening? I just wanted to know.
By then, the pornographic image disappeared, but the attack of the trolls continued with their demands to speak. After a couple of outbursts, Mayor J.W. Musgrove told them to hold off until the council got to the public comment part of the agenda.
We're conducting a city council meeting, and right now is not the time for public input.
I just want to know what's happening.
Please identify yourself.
My name is Wrighton.
As the staff scrambled to regain control of the online meeting, council member Pete Hallgren, who was out of town and participating over Zoom, said he could see the trolls' names on his monitor.
The name on the screen says Joao Moonhose.
That appeared to trigger the person using that alias, and he began bickering with Hallgren.
Hey, Pete, can I know why you're reading my name? Do you have a problem with me or something?
Absolutely have a problem with you. Are you trying to attend this city council meeting in Delta Junction, Alaska?
Yeah. I of course I'm trying to do this. That's why I'm in the meeting.
Okay, then if you're attending our meeting, that's fine. Just keep your mouth shut until it's open for public participation.
Please, talk respectfully to me.
City staff could be heard trying to figure out how to remove the attackers from Zoom until City Administrator Ken Greenleaf pulled the plug. Library Director Tiki Levinson, who was managing the webcast, told the online audience the virtual meeting was over.
So we're sorry, but we're going to be suspending our Zoom meeting this evening, and you can call in by phone, Pamela and Pete.
Greenleaf said in an interview Wednesday that council members resumed the meeting a few minutes later by telephone and got through the whole agenda without any more interruptions.
To keep the meeting going, we jumped back in and did a conference call and facilitated the rest of the meeting with all of council people available.
He said city officials are reviewing the meeting recording and will pass it and other information along to the Alaska State Troopers. He says staff is taking precautions to make sure the city isn't Zoom bombed again.
We take it pretty seriously, and we're not going to stop using Zoom. And we're kind of still exploring some of our options, but there are security features that we're making sure that our people are trained on.
Greenleaf says those additional security measures likely will require some changes in how it manages future city council meeting Zoomcasts. In Delta.
There were a lot more new jobs than expected last month. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute. Economists predicted about 200,000. The economy delivered more than 300,000 new jobs in March. The unemployment rate inched down to 3.8%. It has been below 4% for more than 2 years. Job gains helped boost wages, which on average rose 0.3% month over month. Annually, they're up more than 4%, outpacing inflation. The strong labor market indicators could prompt the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates where they are. In Baltimore, engineers working to clear the collapsed bridge blocking the city's port expect to restore more ship traffic by the end of the month. A channel, limited in size, would accommodate vessels that carry automobiles and farm equipment, the port's specialty. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the fifth day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 7:24. It will set again at 9 o'clock. That will give us 13 hours and 36 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 58 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date is 58. That was set in 2020. And our record low was 11, set in 1949. Currently 41 degrees with a few clouds out there. We're on our way to a predicted high temperature of 42. Out at the airport, they are showing west winds at 13, gusting to 20 miles per hour. And they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly clear skies overnight. West winds to 20, gusting to 30 today and tonight. Look for a low temperature around 30 tonight. But the weather is expected to change tomorrow. Look for snow between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., then rain and snow after that. High near 39 tomorrow. Light and variable winds turning to the southeast to 10 in the afternoon. And for Saturday night, rain and snow showers becoming all rain after 8 p.m. And Sunday, they're calling for rain and snow becoming all rain in the afternoon. And more stuff like that on Monday, too. Actually, just a chance of snow showers on Monday before 11 a.m. Looking at our local tides, we just had a high tide here on the east side at 11:56. Our next low tide will be at 6:34 this afternoon and be minus 4/10, followed by a high tide at 1:01 a.m. of 7.7 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen in just a few minutes at 12:37 a.m. and be 13 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:11 p.m. of minus 6/10, and your high tide late night will be 1:30 a.m. and be 13.6 feet in Larsen Bay.
Where would you go? A pro baseball game? A Rolling Stones concert? A Broadway show? The lucky winner of KMXT's travel raffle will get to choose from three different packages that include a hotel stay, tickets to a concert, show, or game, and $1,100 of cold hard cash for your trip. Only 300 tickets were printed. Contact a KMXT board member or stop by the station at 620 Egan Way to pick up your tickets today. Tickets are $40 each, two for $75 or three for $100.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island, Usitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tonight, west winds to 25 knots for today and tonight with 7-foot seas. For tomorrow, south 20, seas to 5 feet, and for Saturday night, northeast 20, seas coming up to 9 feet, and Sunday they're saying north 25, seas to 9 feet. Monday through Thursday, west winds to 30 knots on our east side. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow, west winds to 25 knots for today and tonight, 6-foot seas becoming 5-foot seas tonight in the Chillicothe. For tomorrow, southeast 15 becoming northeast 25 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas building to 6 feet in the afternoon. And for Saturday night in the Chillicothe, northeast 20 seas to 5 feet. Sunday, north 25 with 6-foot seas, and Monday through Tuesday, west 25 and seas to 6 feet in the Chillicothe. The Alaska Tribal Administrators Association and the Alaska Native Village Corporation Association is hosting a 3-day symposium in April to strengthen partnerships and prepare effective leaders to bring funding back to rural communities. This symposium is scheduled for April 23rd through 25th at the Hilton Anchorage, and you can learn more at ruralalaska.net. The reason I'm telling you now is the early bird registration was Tuesday, April 2nd. Well, someone stole our announcements for Galley Tables and the Kodiak Marketplace. They're both happening tonight, but Bradley hand wrote some scrawlings. Galley Tables is tonight at 7 p.m. at the Kodiak Marketplace. The theme is Call of the Wild. It's the last one for the season. And the Kodiak First Friday Art Walk is going on downtown and at the Frame Shop. You can look at all kinds of different locations, including the Kodiak History Museum, kiosk number one in the downtown marketplace, the cidery and brewery, and the Frame Shop, all featuring different artists tonight between 5 and 7 p.m. Tomorrow is the kickoff Audubon hiking season hike. It's celebrating the long migration of gray whales, and it's going to start at the Sag Shack State Park. If you'd like to join them, meet them at 10:30 a.m. at the Sag Shack State Park restrooms.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.